Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, 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 everybody. How you doing? It is the, what is it, by the way? It's the 11th day of February. Look, this is 2 weeks in a row that I'm under the weather. I don't know what the hell is going on with myself all of a sudden, but it ain't cute. I know that much. This week, I find myself all stuffed up, and I mean bad, man. I actually had to go to the VA yesterday, and that's not cool, especially when you're out of town. I'm in Detroit this weekend visiting my folks and sitting back having a good old time. I called in a couple favors from a couple friends and the maestro behind the music on the show. That would be Mr. Beans. He's actually coming in from Cleveland today. So he, Airman Dan, myself, we're going to sit back and kick it like we used to, you know, chop it up like we were back in Maxwell Air Force Base, Montgomery, Alabama, 1994 to 1997. That's when I left. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's important to me to always foster and build upon the relationships that I've established throughout the years. And it's stuff like this that makes it work. You know, the plan was to do some other stuff while I was up here, and it just didn't work out, and that's okay. You know, it's always on the docket to spend time with folks, so even though those things fell apart, it just gives me more time to spend with them, and that's important. Dan had some stuff to do this morning, which worked out, so I could break off, do the show. But as soon as we're done, then, you know, it's back in the street. And it's cold up this month, I tell you. It was almost 70 degrees in Baltimore on Thursday. To leave that to this, oh, good Lord, what was I thinking? But I've been to Detroit, and I've been to Toronto during the winter before. You know, one of those things, man, you put a coat on, you put some clothes on, you go outside. Like, it is what it is. I know what day it is on the calendar. I'm not stupid. You know what I'm saying? It's the winter time. What the hell do you expect? So there that is, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, last week we missed out on the blessing of having Sister Rashi with us, but she's back with us this week. Morning, sis. How you doing?
I'm well. I'm a lot weller than you, I guess. You say you got checked out. What them people say about you, bro?
Nah, they just said my sinuses were inflamed and all that type of jazz. You know what I'm saying? I got to drain that stuff out. So if
they didn't give
I
you one
the,
of the three now. They didn't say you the Corona
nah,
man ain't visiting.
Nah.
Well, see, here's the
nah,
deal,
because,
you know,
nah,
the
nah.
people acting like it's not still popping, but we still under siege, you know. So you
yes,
just have
are.
To be hyper-vigilant right now. And what you think might be sinuses could be more important. And, you know, folks just need to be checking on themselves anyway. But, yeah, I'm
well. And their loved ones.
And their loved ones. I'm well. I'm, you know, coming off of a family loss. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to discuss it without, you know, aggravating, you know, people are saying something that I wasn't there to actually know. But it's one of them it's a weird situation, if you ask me. And my family is, while we're trying to get past it, it's got so much quirk to it. We having an issue with getting it, you know, completely resolved. So hopefully, you know, I'll be able to explain it in a way that people don't get upset. But it was something that I want us to discuss. Because when we talk about things like why, what's happening to black people, you know, what has historically happened to us, what has happened, you know, and what's happening to us now. And if you follow the rules of Sankofa, where you prepare yourself based on, you know, things that have come to pass in the past, then you have to start making plans for things like us being hungry or us having to fight for our voting rights and us having to, you know, fight for employment opportunities or having to create them because there's whole industries that have decided they don't have to hire you, you know. So there's a lot happening that has happened to black people, happening, and those things together should be driving our plans, you know, on what could possibly be happening based upon, you know, future trends. If you got your ear to the ground.
I wanted to ask you one question. I didn't want to go too personal, but were the affairs in order? Or no?
Yeah, it was weird. In fact, the double affairs in order. Because we were talking about the person was in the union. My cousin was a union man. And so he had that. And his wife had a policy connected, you know, that whole other thing. And then his mother, who had already lost a son, her other son, understood the nature of life and has, and she probably got a policy on me that I don't know about. Do you have to sign any paperwork for people to have a policy on you? Anyway.
Absolutely
so,
not.
You know, she's understanding that shit happens. And so she has a financial cloak wrapped around herself for all her loved ones so that when shit happens, she don't have to cry shit. She just call the white people, you know. So, but what happens then is the affairs in order. What I am undergoing here is a fight over a body, like a fight between two and three factions over who should be able to bury or how that person should be buried or all this, you know, with this decent pockets of money. And it just became quite strange, you know. However, not as strange as the details of the actual death. That's some secondary strange, you know. And I guess it makes me want to figure out who, you know, how to relieve that burden as much as possible from anyone who thinks they even possibly care about me, you know.
I think that it's important that we establish living wills and along with a final will and testament so that you can relieve those stresses. You know, I've said on a number of occasions that my goddaughter will be the person taking care of the affairs. And I'm not doing that to exclude my children, but I'm doing that to allow them to grieve. Not that she will not be grieving, but I think she's far enough removed that she can handle it, get through it, and then give her and take some time for her to actually grieve properly. You know what I'm saying? So
I think about things like that. You said children because you breed it responsibly, right? You know
mm-hmm.
how many children you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the opinion that I'm not sure that my cousin actually knew all of his children. And the ones he knew had been spread by microwaved peanut butter across an array of women who, you know, couldn't even show up to the same. They couldn't even, you know, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
A funeral here, maybe I think a funeral there, a memorial here, some people pouring out liquor in a cabin somewhere that nobody, you know, unfortunately a dealer missing his regular call, you understand? And
mm-hmm.
so it's so scattered. It's so to where this lifestyle that this individual lived was so scattered. And the oats that he sold were so many that it's impossible for him to actually care. It don't matter what the damn will say. You understand? It don't matter what the pop is. He had left it to where nobody knew what was truly in his heart to be, you know, his wife mm-hmm. got the, his current wife got different something, a different version of him than his mother. He gets a different version mm-hmm. of him than his oldest daughter. Who gets a different version of him than the baby daughter who had just had his grandbaby. And mm-hmm. another whole version of him for this 4-year-old son that he's created. You understand? And this man has, I would say, at least 10 children.
Mm.
Okay? And some children don't know about other children. So how do you put that in the will? How do you execute that? You understand? If you're a bricklayer, if you're a unionized carpenter, you know. So it's so much, many layers to it, Lee. Getting your house in order. It's not even just a financial thing. It's some shit you had to do while you was out there fucking up. You still had to keep order so that if something happened, your house could be ordered. People who didn't know you as well could still benefit from the love and care you wanted to bestow upon them, but you got to live your life a certain way in order to enact that, Lee.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And you think he was just reckless?
I think copious breeding is reckless. And I don't care what Nick Cannon is popping. I don't care. Mm. I don't care. I don't care how much money you have.
Gigi Wyatt.
Because she's been married her whole time, okay? So that's not technically copious. She's been married. She's not just a good man, but she's been trying. She's a Christian woman. Kiki White is a hyper Christian.
She just took
that go forth and multiply part really, 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 really serious.
Literally.
But what we're talking about is not no whoa, okay? And Kiki, you know, so we have to decide when is this behavior ordered. Can baby mama number one call baby mama number two and alert her that while y'all was together, something happened? And you understand? Can all your baby mamas call each other and say something happened to Lee?
Mm. Well, I only have one baby mother, so I don't have that issue.
But you know what, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
And in that harmonious seed that you sow among people, where you're not pitting them against each other so you can get power one over the other, and they feel some kind of way when you're looking at the other one. When you are a person who didn't put honor and virtue into your behavior, you don't have to do so much work in getting your house in order. You don't have to start telling people about secret babies. You understand? They don't find out in wheels that they only get a third because there's actually two other unidentified people that you knew about that they didn't know about.
Unidentified. I got you.
Hey, I got a lady who hit me up not even a year ago because she did her DNA 23 and who the hell is me? And come to find out her daddy gotta be my uncle, like the way the DNA lines up. The people she's affiliated with who took the test, it's gotta be a particular uncle. But he's already got a harem full of children that people know about. And at least two harems that nobody knows about. So we think she a part of harem number two. And I'm like, the man's gone. He whored himself into the grave. His wife, current wife, is not going to cough up even her food stamp card for you. What's happening?
Right.
What's happening? And it's just become so to where you don't even get to know somebody until they dead for real, Lee. They present so well in life. They present so clean in life. And then just the people who come to the funeral let you know who you're dealing with. The state of the people who come, the age, the hell, whether or not they are sober or not. They let you know.
So what for you was your biggest takeaway from your cousin's passing? As you always relay the question, what is the actionable item that you took away that you walked out of that mug and like,
okay.
I got to get
and
on
And I mean this. Okay, and every listener, if right now you are under the stronghold of white dope, now, I don't know how to explain that no better. If the pills is white or if it's whatever you're snorting is white, if it's injectable and it's white, if when you receive it in your hand, the shit is white, you got to get you a test kit where you pull a grain or two out to see if what they giving you is the coke you ordered or the heroin you ordered or is it some shit that you, as soon as you touch it, it's going to kill you? I need for people who do white dope out there to know that you don't have an allegiance in your dealer. People who are dealing in white dope right now are not having a problem with having less customers. They willing to put shit in white dope, and hear me, I'm talking about it could be meth, it could be, you know, highly powdered up crystallized meth, it could be cocaine, it could be heroin, all right? And if you're not looking for this shit, this particular drug, it could still be in your drug of choice without your permission, and your dealer is either not sophisticated enough to protect you from the drug you don't want to do or open and actively putting something that you don't do in some shit that you do. The drug is fentanyl. And if
so how – I'm lost. How is that an actionable item for you, though? That's what
this is for my listeners because, see, I don't do white dope. See, this is exactly what I'm saying. This is not necessarily for me. This is for somebody out there who's sprinkling coke, what they think is coke, on a blunt or something, or they sniffing what they think is coke, or they shooting up what they think is stepped on heroin. You understand? They understand it's been stepped down, not stepped up with fentanyl. You understand? I need for people who are listening to this show who are in any way, form, addicted to white dope, including what they think are Percocets, but somebody has gone in, crushed down 6 Percocets, added some sick shit, and repressed them Percocets and given you what you think is one dope, but because you buying it with that number and letter strike on it. But you can do that. You can buy those. You can make an alternative to those, you know, pills and all that shit they own, and also still lace that with this sneak attack drug that's being added to white dope. So my takeaway message, if you want to know why I can't call my primo right now, is because he fell victim to either a predatory dealer or some chain of wholesale heroin that it was been laced, and he was not able, his body was not on that. He had trained himself or had been fallen onto a particular drug for a certain amount of time. But that is not what we are receiving. So the takeaway is some drugs can be trusted. If you a mushroom head, you might be able to do your mushrooms right now, because no, there's no body sprinkling fentanyl on fucking mushrooms.
On mushrooms.
If you a redhead, right now, you might be in a little, you know, because they might be able to dilute some of that crazy stuff into some sherm sticks or wet sticks. I don't know about that technology right now, but I can tell you this. If what you're taking is white, and if you're not getting them pills directly from a pharmaceutical technician's hand, and you hoping that these keys you just got for, you know, a dollar, you know, you say, I hit the lick with my perkies, and you went and you bought them, and you thought you got pharmaceutical-grade Percocets, and then you can't even, you start taking them like you've been taking them. You understand? Because it's not something new to you. And you become ill, you have a heart attack, you die, okay? It don't, for fentanyl is not kind. It don't give you no whole bunch of slip back time. And if you're not a trained person who know you slipping into the light to take your Narcan shot or be doing dope with somebody that will Narcan you back to life, you understand? You gone. And there is no trust in that white dope system right now, in my opinion, that will let you do drugs like heroin, unless you want some black tar heroin like Amy Winehouse, okay? If you're doing injectable heroin where you have to melt it down and inject it, you in danger. If you're doing pressed pills like Percocets, well, Xanax is yellow. They haven't quite really got to the benzodiazepines for real right now, but all them pain medications, you know what I'm talking about, Lee. All I can think about right now is Vicodin. You know who I'm talking about. You know them little white pills. I said codeine. All right. All you have to do, Lee, is grind that down, right? Throw some shit in there that ain't got no business being in there. Right? And repress the fucking pill. There's no trust anymore that score on the pill is legitimate from a pharmaceutical agency. Unless you got it from at the pharmacy, from the hands of a pharm tech, you putting your life in danger. Coke as well. They stepping on it, playing with it, stepping on it. Plenty of people are thinking they are buying a couple of little cute bumps so they can go out and party. And they having heart attacks, and they dead on the dance room floor because there was no honor between the dealer they got it from and or whoever that you understand in that chain of people who are playing with that powder. There's a play for white dope right now. And if that's what you want, you need to either get yourself 16 cans of Narcan, do dope with a friend, or you need to get a testing kit for your shit to make sure, just shave off a couple of crumbs of it and get it tested.
Right.
Because you don't know what, there is no honor no more among white dope dealers and their customers. And that's my takeaway.
Okay. But again, my question, I get that, and I appreciate you giving that advice to the listeners. But for you, what did you walk away saying, you know, hey, this is something that I've been putting off. I may want to get on top of it.
I stalked my cousins on the internet. I do more work not calling them than calling them. I'm abreast of every baby's move. I know who's walking. I know who's smoking cigars at the club. And so I don't have that much except I maybe could have talked to him a little bit more. But when people are in a show mode, high mode, show you now, hide for the rest of the time, you don't get to call them whenever. They just look at their phone. They don't even hit the button where it hang up because they know that's going to register. They just let the thing ring and let you leave your message. And so you leave enough of those messages and you say, I'm going to wait till they call me. I'm not going to, that's a lesson. I can't unlearn that. That's just human nature. That's how that has to work. But as far as what, having your affairs in order, that's something that I guess has to happen. But it's harder for some than others. But mostly, Lee, I'm glad that I was able to travel without getting pulled over by the police this time.
Oh!
I don't know how tight my booty was driving to Denver. Man, I was like, oh, my God. This is when the cops get super racist as you go through Kansas up into these mountains. But apparently nothing is worse than Oklahoma. So what's the takeaway? Cruise control is your friend. Cruise control can stop people from being predatory on your car.
Leave on time.
And leave on time. And
if not,
you know,
early.
Because, you know, folks going to die, you know. You might be ready for it. In fact, I just found out somebody else that I really cared about just died a couple of days ago, and I'm just scared to go talk to the family. You know, I just don't want to be grieving again. I'm tired of grieving. I'm tired of it. I hate to sound so callously, but this is like my third or fourth dead person. And, you know, I'm like, come on now. Somebody, do something about these folks. Look, whose turn is it to take care of these people? And so they can stop dying like this, but that's not how that works, Lee.
That's not how that works.
Them folks going to die on you, Lee, and you just have to prepare a place for that. You have to prepare an absence place for the ones who you care about, to prepare for the possibility of absence. Do you have that? Do you have like a reserve in your heart where you know, as much as I love you, one day I'm going to have to figure out this without you?
Absolutely. You know, my mom, we've actually put her in a nursing home now because she just got too combative to be at home. So it really is a matter of time. And I'm okay with that. I'm so okay with that. And I was hoping by now Rodney and or Thomas would have joined, but I don't know how much longer I can go. I'm actually moving. So I had been seeking a transfer with the job for a while, and nothing had come through. I got the word that the facility in North Carolina was interested in talking to me. So they flew me down. They flew me out. It was actually last week. It was last week they flew me out. And I interviewed with them last week, Wednesday, flew out same day. what was looking like a lateral move actually turned into a promotion that was not on my radar at all, but, you know, it's not in my plan. It's definitely in God. So
I accepted
the job, and I'll actually be relocating from Maryland to North Carolina at the beginning of next month. My first day of work is the 6th of March. My last day of work in Maryland is the 3rd of March. Yeah, so you're talking, I have 9 working days left in Maryland. That's it. And the bulk of those, 5 of those, yeah, 5 of those will happen this week coming. So this thing is happening fast, and I'm looking forward to the transition.
Well, North Carolina is beautiful. I'm sure you know that. Just as green as it wants to be. The air quality is fantastic. You absolutely need to take both of those cars because you don't want to be in North Carolina without your ride. You cannot walk.
Not at all.
You cannot walk in North Carolina. I don't care where you live. You can't walk there. You can't walk where you're going. So, yeah, I think it's a wonderful hub of it's like a second or tertiary black mecca because, of course, Chicago is kind of, black mecca. Atlanta is black mecca. Some would scream Detroit, but I've been up there. The shit ain't real. But to me, North Carolina, that's Raleigh. It just has been a good place for black, especially black scientists, to earn a decent living. If you are not afraid of test tubes, if you are not afraid of, kind of being out a part of that research triangle part, which is how I got introduced to what North Carolina could be, and because I'm a scientist by trade, it turned out that if I really wanted to build a life, North Carolina was an excellent choice because it was just country enough. It's just city enough. They haven't fucked around with the cost of living as much. The cuisine is you can get fat out there now. It's Midwestern cuisine. It's not progressive fare, but you can fix that. You can become the person, your own personal chef, and you can try to gravitate yourself to it. But it's a lot of barbecue, baby. And it's a whole lot of smothered oxtails over rice and gravy. It's a whole lot of that codfish and whatnot there. And so you do have to be mindful of your diet in those kind of somewhat coastal, but mostly, rural. And if you really want to keep your money, the more rural you have to go, Lee. So have you already picked your place?
I saw a couple of places online. I'm actually going to fly out next week and do it then. So this week, Detroit, next weekend, I'm actually back home in Maryland. And then the weekend after, I'll be doing the show from Charlotte because I'll be in Charlotte that weekend to the house hunt. So it's a couple of places I saw online that I was digging on. I just need to see them in person. And if they are what I need them to be, then I'm going to go for it. It's 3 places. I'm not running around like chicken with my head cut off because I can live anywhere for a year. If it's not exactly what I want or if I think it is what it is and then it turns out to be something else, or I just recognize or realize, okay, yeah, this is cool, but I can do better here than, I can do anywhere for a year. So it's renting first determining how long I really want
to
be there.
It's an elderly population, I could imagine. So don't be afraid to be the guy in the attic or the guy in the back part of the house or the guy in the basement, because a lot of these people have decided, I don't want to leave. And while they're not asking you to be a hospice person, they would like not to be just them and the nurse. You understand? And there's plenty of space. These kind of areas, that kind of country living, they have some good real estate. You can find people living in a 5-bedroom, 3 bath. You understand?
I'm not trying to do that. I mean, I definitely want my own space, period, without a doubt. So, I just got to figure out where I want to be. Like I said, I found three spots already. I'm more leaning toward being in South Carolina. I just think it's going to be simple all the way around. However,
but
I'm
working. But you'll be working in North Carolina, living in South Carolina?
Correct. But Charlotte is a border city. So you're talking nothing. You know what I'm saying? It's like Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri.
Kansas City. Okay. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying? That's a pretty easy transition, yes.
Right. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Well, I'm so happy to know that you are moving and shaking, because I know forward mobility just keep young, it keep black men like feeling, you know, less like they got to get like fake toupees and fast cars and bimbo bitches and, you know,
right,
you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, women who cannot compete with them on an intellectual level and are there for, to drain them financially. So,
and their white juices.
I'm glad. Or be up in there, right, or right. So I'm just so glad.
So when you,
to
you
hear
said that earlier, when you said that earlier, I was like, where's she going there with this? You like, if you're on anything white, I'm like, hold on now. What do you think? I was like, oh, okay, I got you.
White.
But yeah, man, so. This is something.
You know what? I'm pretty sure you can find somebody who will akin our affinity for white Jesus, and how some people's affinity for white Jesus just gets them internally, you know, and ethereally high, you know. But no, that's not what I'm talking about. Lee, have
mm-hmm.
you been watching the news?
With respect to what?
With respect to what? Everything.
Yeah,
what
I've been
in
watching
the news?
That's what.
Because it's black.
The Chinese balloons.
The Chinese balloons.
That's really captivated me. The fact that, you know, top secret documents or classified documents are still popping up in people's homes. Mike Pence's home recently was searched, and there were more classified documents there. There were more classified documents found in Mar-a-Lago. So, you know, obviously, Biden's home, there were documents found there. So, again, I said this before. You know, is this the norm or not? Because if everybody's doing it, in my head, this is the norm. The issue with Trump, because, you know, people are like, well, why is it such a big problem with Trump? The issue with Trump is that the documents were requested back. He said he was going to return them. He didn't. That was the issue. So these other documents may be very much a nothing burger. Yeah, they have classified stamps on them, but they very well may be a nothing burger, where the documents that Trump had were really hot. So they were needed back. And when he refused to give them back and they tried to work with him, or they moved the needle, well, okay, year, 9 months, okay, 8 months, you know, whatever, he violated that portion, and that was the thing that got him in hot water. Had he turned the documents in, I don't even think it would be that big of a deal, because once documents are found in Biden's property, it would have been a tit-for-tat, a wash, if you will, bye-bye-bye, we move on and keep pressing. But since he was asked to return them, and he didn't for almost an entire year again, that was and is the problem.
Well, they've got another thing they didn't shut down over Alaska. So
Alaska,
apparently,
yep.
we just gonna have to just look up more often and see who who's actually. Because we be looking down at their phones so much, I don't think we look up as much no
Ooh,
more. You just gonna have to start looking up. Start looking up more. What to say? That's the actionable advice. Take your phone and point it up. And while they taking pictures of you, take pictures of them. This is what I want to know. How they know that balloon was Chinese? Like, what do you do? Because you're the military man. What we got to do to know if a random flying object is of a Chinese origin?
Well, obviously, you know, Rodney said this last week. We have been tracking it forever. Let's start with that. Then the second part, the technology on it, is very easily traceable to the owner. This item that was shot down over Alaska was not classified as yet as a balloon or anything. So I think the wreckage of that would be more than telling. But as news broke, the story snuck on the back pages that this wasn't the first time something like this had happened. So, again, from us tracking the other ones, from the previous times, from us looking at the onboard electronics, we could track it back to the source based on.
Thank you for clearing that up, because I was like, is this some kind of messages intercepting this in Chinese, or did they see Chinese, is there Chinese writing on the outside? Like, how do you, anyway, okay, so the other thing that has really pulled at my heart this week is that earthquake, Lee. I'm talking about, like, every time I looked in the phone, it went from, like, 1,000 to 1,500 to 3,500. Last time I looked, they said 10,000 people from Turkey are dead. Are dead in Turkey from earthquake. Like, now, to me, that's the place where we send our humanitarian aid. Not to fund war, but to keep victims of just, like, what this planet will do. Right, to keep these particular humans on this planet from just being, like, totally wiped out from seismic and, you know, volcanic activity. So after usually an earthquake that had killed 10,000 people, right, doesn't it usually tsunami somewhere else? Like, it have a backlash somewhere else?
I agree.
I haven't heard
about that, right?
Right, you don't hear. Mm-hmm. So what are we talking about? People doing, like, are we saying earthquake and not really giving it its full? Should we be looking at something more covert in Turkey? Because 10,000 people, that sounds like some Indonesian numbers. But when Indonesians and them do it, then there's a tsunami or something in Hawaii or Japan. I don't have my geo shit, but you know what I'm talking about. All that seismic activity come with reverb. I mean, Newton said it. All them reactions have a equal and opposite. Right. So either something bumping up where. Wherever Turkey knocked up against, did it get something? Or how much do you know about what's happening in Turkey?
I don't know a lot immediately. I will admit to that. I know that some more bodies were found today. I know that workers are still working through the rubble, even though they are working against all odds because they keep finding people alive. They're still working and looking to see if they can find any more survivors. I don't know why this seems to be, as you just described it, more self-contained than anything. But the fact
Wait, Lee,
that...
Look.
So many, go ahead.
Wait, let me read this to you, all right? Because I said 10,000, right? Check this out. The regions affected by Monday's earthquake are home to an estimated, this is NPR, by the way, estimated 13.5 million people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including as many as 2 million refugees that are from Syria. It said the earthquake has killed more than 25,000, okay, in Turkey and Syria. And tens of thousands have been injured. Tens of thousands of buildings have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is what I'm asking you now. when you get that kind of magnitude of destruction, usually there's something.
I thought you were still going. So, yeah, yes, there's that is a whole lot of people that have lost their lives. But, again, all the news focus thus far has been on those who are continuously being saved. Now, obviously, you got to worry about cleanliness in a situation like this because that is going to be the next thing that will probably start killing people. The lack of food, water, clean water, good clean water, and as I said, cleanliness and or personal hygiene. Because when you have that much destruction, how much space do you have really to move around and not be in direct contact with, you know, people? Or how much is left of the infrastructure that provides the people that are still alive with a safe, clean environment in order to bathe, in order to clean food and before they cook it, because, you know, we black folks usually clean our food before we cook it. You know, you better rinse that chicken off before you throw that up in there.
That's right. You better
clean
rinse
water.
It.
You better rinse that off. You know, clean water in order to drink and drink it, bathe in it, and cook with it. So those are real questions.
But we're not rerouting no money to them, Lee. We haven't rerouted no money. Do you know of any humanitarian aid we already send into Turkey? We still pushing it in arms, military weapons, and money to the Ukraine and stuff. So, you know, it's almost like the stuff we should be really helping with, we not, and the stuff we should be like helping to de-escalate.
I disagree with that. Because there's no de-escalation in the Ukraine. If you try to be soft, Putin is going potentially to go off the handles, and you don't want to do that. So you have to check it against him hard because you just don't know which way this guy's going to go. Defeat for him, he'll probably kill himself, to be honest with you, before he admits defeat. As far as the victims of the earthquake, I don't know. I haven't read anything about the announcement of humanitarian aid as of yet, but that doesn't mean it's not coming. You know, we still are fighting a debt ceiling fight on the Hill, and I'm not opposed to taking care of a house before you take care of home. I mean, shucks. We got to make sure our house is straight before we start helping anybody else. The money ain't there. We all know about that right now. That's why we're talking about the debt ceiling bump up to increase the debt ceiling. So I don't think you can spend what you don't really have. And I don't think it's wrong for those in Washington to focus on what's going on in America first. I don't think that's wrong.
Did you watch it, Lee?
I don't. Did I watch what?
The State of the Union.
I did not.
It was so ghetto. Oh, my God.
Hold on. Rodney's on, so I wanted to get his opinion about the earthquake. Rodney, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Good morning, everybody. Hey, man, luckily I got a phone call that woke me up. Otherwise, I might have been missing all of this good conversation you all are having.
the earthquake, where are you at with that right now?
Well, the earthquake is, you know, this falls into the act of God. So, you know, there's nothing that we probably could have the technology to do to have prevented the earthquake. And as far as the deaths are concerned, you know, I would say, you know, thank goodness to the advancements in construction methods and materials here in the United States that we don't suffer the same fate when we have large earthquakes or earthquakes, period. And I would guess that those deaths in Turkey are attributed to densely populated areas and building practices and lack of proper materials to mitigate the effects of the earthquake. I mean, Japan has humongous earthquakes, and they don't face the number of deaths because their construction methods and technology is advanced that it mitigates the impact. So I think that when we look back at why there were so many deaths in Turkey, it's going to come down to some very basic things. One, it was a large earthquake. It was an earthquake on land, not at sea, and hence why you don't have a tsunami warning. Because typically when there's, like, let's say you had an earthquake in Indonesia on that plate, or earthquake in, like, in the, you know, the Pacific realm, the reason why you had a tsunami is because on that plate, when it slips, literally lifts water up, and just the law of physics, that sudden and very powerful motion propels the water basically almost supersonic at least about 500 miles per hour. And that's why you get those tsunamis. But when you have it on, you know, in a large, it's a large plate, and the earthquake is contained within land, you don't get that extra effect of the tsunami. So that's, and I'm speculating here, that's why we don't have a tsunami warning like we've had when there's earthquakes in, like, the Pacific realm and other areas like that. But, yeah, I think it's a horrible thing. But it's a horrible thing that you're not able to stop the earthquake. The only, mostly you're able to mitigate the impact by the construction materials and, you know, how densely populated an area was.
I'm just surprised, you know, with our scientific know-how, we're not able to predict these behaviors more often, you know. Like, I know it's not weather. I'm not trying to be funny, or even climate for that matter, but at some point there has to be a degree of seismic activity where you say, you know what, that's a little bit more than usual. Like, they can predict sometimes the eruption of a volcano or something like that. But we need to put more technology in, you know, predictive behavior on what, since we're going to be floating on these crusty plates, and, you know, to be, you know, until we get another planet colonized, we should be knowing more about, you know, what these shifts are, because it's going to take California, a good chunk of California is going to float right on out. So they still selling real estate on the part that's going to float out. So that should be a conversation had. If you want to say, okay, we're going to sell it to you now, but you got about, in our opinion, you got about 100 years. So you can live here, but you might not want to pass the land down to your grandchildren. You know, those are the kind of conversations people would like to have. If you say this piece of land y'all own, it cannot withstand 13.5 million people. This is a tectonic plate. You're leaning on it really, really hard, like somebody leaning on the back of a fairly cheap couch. And it looks good, but you just know if they keep leaning like this, if they keep applying that kind of pressure, that it's going to be known that it's just kind of like that cheap plywood in the inside. You have to warn people that they live on shaky ground. And I don't think we, as a planet, or as a country, because we got shaky ground in America, and we make our ground shaky with natural gas, you know, the harvesting and collection of fracking and whatnot. We build shakiness into our crust by pumping it for gas and whatnot. So we should be telling people, hey, nail that stuff down, because occasionally your whole world going to shake, you know. One of the things I was talking to Lee about, Brother Rodney, was this State of the Union address. Did you get to watch it?
I did. And one of the, I know I heard you broach the issue. Actually, I thought it was one of the better speeches of Joe Biden's very long career, definitely one of the better speeches of his presidency, probably one of the best speeches for the country in general, and one of the best speeches that a president can give at this particular moment in our transition from democracy to fascism.
I mean, I see where he was going. He was speaking as fast as he could. He didn't want to look sleepy. He was doing his best to enunciate, but what you laughing? It's not funny, because for real, had he slowed that speech down even a millisecond, people would have been like, oh, God, here we go. But he tried to keep it, the pace of it, the quip of it, pretty fast, but they were smart not to put him just on the teleprompter. They printed that shit out in his notebook pad he had. That was super smart. And the only problem I was having, what is this deal? Like, did it start with Barack? I don't remember presidents being heckled.
Yeah, it did start with him.
Like, when did that, is that a thing? Like, when did that become a thing? The top dude is going to stand there and tell you what he has. He can only bend the truth a little bit. He can't stand there and completely lie. It's enough people in this country checking whether or not, you know, his name is actually Joe Biden now.
That's
how you going to stand there and
Trump
lie?
Trump blatantly lied about things that he claimed, but you can lie. It's not in your best interest, because obviously you have a gazillion fact checkers, and now you have social media that can blast you instantly versus you having to deal with it in the early morning run of the Post and the Times, so on and so forth, Wall Street Journal. So, no, you can lie, but it became a thing when the black guy became president, because they, being the Republicans, wanted time and time again to try their best to show that he was not worthy to be the president, and or they did not believe in the legitimacy of his presidency, so they did whatever they wanted to do. And sadly, because they are Republican and white, they are allowed to remain in the chamber after they do some crap work. They should be removed.
Have you ever seen Parliament, Rodney, Lee? Have you ever seen British Parliament, or I guess it's Parliament, when they get to arguing with each other over a case or a claim or a bill or a law? I don't know what it is, but they call each other nincompoops. They stand up and scream at each other. They point. It's very bombastic. You know what I'm saying? They just get real. But I grew up watching the State of the Union. It used to be an assignment for your civics class. You had to watch it and take notes. It was an assignment for my children. You had to watch it and take notes. Write the lies down, okay? But how can you teach children anything when they stand up and go, shut up, you lying! Nuh-uh! And you can get, like, whole people that they have to stop the timer and say, can y'all stop? Because this is lies. Stop screaming. And then to let the president speak. When do we, how do we, you say put them out? You get more, they're going to get more love being put out of the State of the Union than they do for standing up screaming, you liar.
I think they deserve to get put out, because that's not the place for that. You know, there's a designated rebuttal to the State of the Union by the party that's not in power. That's the place and the time for that. The time and the place to rebut is either through that person's statement, or once you walk out of the chamber, everybody knows, a gazillion news outlets will be there. Then you share whatever it is you want to share. But you don't, just because you don't like the person doesn't mean that you get to disrespect the office. And that's why I say that they need to be escorted out. They need to be escorted out. It's not the time nor the place. It's not the time or the place. We are the United States of America. United, be it we like it or not, we are the United States of America.
Right, because other people watch our State of the Union, right? The world, if you are a major world superpower, the rest of the world is interested in knowing what's going down. And that is the State of the Union is our international news bulletin, where they give an honest attest. This is what our education is doing. This is what our infrastructure is doing. This is what the state of business is like in America. This is what the state of health is like in America. This is what the state of politics and entertainment is doing. And then you're able to say, well, this is what's popping, right? Okay, how are you going to stand up? You lied. Shut up. Come on. Okay, that's not what you show on the international front.
And the majority of those cats are lawyers.
Hey, let me tell you what they're doing for that kind of behavior. And they killing people. There's some protesters right now getting killed. Where was that at? I'm sorry, I got my new, it's right on the tip of my tongue. But they just got through just marching in the street, and now they on trial, and they ready for capital punishment. And we got people that stand in front of the president, who work for him or work under him or work with him, supposedly, screaming, no, I can't do it out of my job. Let me tell you how long I would be fired if I justifiably stood up and told everybody that the principal was lying when she said it was free for us to come dress up for Chiefs Friday, this last Friday. She was lying. We had to pay $1. We had to pay $1.
You jump up and say some crap like that at your job, like you said, you'll be broke and homeless.
Broken homeless over $1 for the Chiefs because I called her out over her lies.
Roddy, what you feel about that, bro? You feel we've gone too far?
We've definitely gone too far. It is not new to the Congress. I mean, when you think about what happened during those founding fathers, there were people getting beat to death just about with canes and whatnot. So this is not new to this era. It is as far as Congress is concerned. So they didn't start it in the Obama era. And as a matter of fact, you might even, if you go back to when George W. was in charge, you may see that there was some behaviors by the Democrats that would be suspect in Congress. This is the classic case of if you give an inch, they'll take a mile. And to bring it to modern times, because this is something that we knew happened in the past, and when it happened in the past, Congress self-policed itself and came up with some really strict rules on how you would conduct yourself. And, that's why the gentle lady and the gentleman from the great state of, kind of, type of conversation that seems archaic, but there was a purpose for that. That was to keep people kind of calm. Even if when you was pissed off, you'd still call them lie, like Sister Roger say, well, my friend from the great state of so-and-so, or my friend, the gentlewoman of the great state of so-and-so.
State of so-and-so,
and then they
right.
go and, right, then they go ahead and put in whatever did.
After the juggler of their friend. Right. After the judge of their friends.
Because there's a job for this. He's called the sergeant at arms, right, Brother Rodney?
Yep.
Well, there's a sergeant at arms, and there's like two or three positions that's supposed to keep that down. And then there's the rules of the Senate or the rules of the House. But we were having a discussion here just a couple of days ago. And I got up to people were talking about this and that, and I said, well, we need a new law. And I said, well, we have three laws on the books now about the same thing. And a law is only good if there's enforcement. And when there was enforcement in the Senate, when there was enforcement in the House, that kept people in check. Once you remove those guardrails, then that where you see someone making faces, or you see someone, taking deep breaths or rolling eyes, it doesn't take long before that, once it's allowed, goes into outbursts. And then instead of it being one outburst one time, now it's multiple outbursts in the same event, and maybe multiple people. You know, you have MTG with her back and forth with the president. And I give Biden credit. He quite nicely handed it back to her.
Brothers, it gave me substitute teacher PTSD. They were treating Joe Biden. He was a stand-in substitute teacher president. And he had got a hold to some recalcitrants back in the back of the classroom. And he was like, A squared plus B squared and C squared. They was like, shut up, you dirty old law. I mean, what the hell is going on here? And we
if you allow these things to happen, which the Republicans did with the Tea Party, the Democrats did it a little bit with George W., but there were repercussions, though. And those repercussions, you know, that penalty, once again, is what tends to bring people in line or keep people from stepping out of line or stepping too far. But when you remove those things, you know, you can – it's just like you remove the background checks report from Jared and Ivanka and say, no, we're going to give them clearances anyway. And next thing you know, Jared's making deals out of office with the people that he plotted those deals with, and all of a sudden he has a $2 billion fund that he's raking in money because the dude was dirty. The background checks prove that he was dirty. And if that would have been me or Lee, neither one of us would have received that clearance. But because of who he was, they removed the guardrail, and now there's consequences, except it's much larger consequences than it would have been of me and Lee. The danger, but here's the big danger of what they're doing. The Republicans in this case are performing. And they're not necessarily performing for Democrats. They're performing for those people who support those types of that type of behavior. They're performing for the 1-6 crowd, which didn't go away. That's what they're doing. They're keeping that alive. They're showing that they're fighting against the machine. That's what they're doing. And the more they do it, the more powerful they have become. Think about people like MTG, Jim Jordan, Comer, some of these people who got kicked off of committees before. You know, you got the dude, Kosar, I believe, from Arizona, who threatened to kill Alexander Ocasio-Cortez and also the President of the United States. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when you threaten to kill the President of the United States, whether I like the person or not, you should be in somebody's courtroom.
That's a done deal. That's a done deal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But again, when you remove those guardrails, you get more of it. Those same people today are in charge of congressional committees investigating why they're being investigated, because they were having sex with an underage child, or they were exchanging information with foreign agents, et cetera.
That's what they said. That's right, that they're being witch hunted, that they are part of, that they've been scooped in into the 1-6 crowd, and that their personal lives are being invaded on, and they have their own like fund bill to stop personal invasions and stuff on their reality, just based on their affiliations with the people who have already been prosecuted and, you know, sentenced and stuff with these insurrection behavior. So how do you get people to agree? That's remind me of Melania's anti-bullying thing. I'm like, how do you get an anti? You are with the biggest bully in the world. How do you get an anti-bullying campaign? Where that money come from? And it's like, if y'all the ones who started this whole insurrection thing with your affiliation, how did y'all drum up enough money and interest to get protection from the people, protection from yourself, protection from the people who, I don't understand how that looked around back for him like that so nicely.
Well, look, let's stay with the theme here, right? Taking off the guardrails and lying. So we had Trump. We understand we had to deal with that fiasco. And now we're dealing with George Santos. I mean, this is a cat that's pretty much made up his entire life. I don't even know if the boy's name is George Santos.
That's
I don't know if he knows. I don't know if he knows if his name is George Santos. That might have been something that he made up along the way. You know what I'm saying? But this is the party, and the people in the party, again, I've said it before, they are willing to do whatever they want or need to do in order to pull out of them. They will sell off their own. They don't care. They will kill their mama and their baby mama and all three of their babies in order for them to win. And they will kindly turn around, allow the cuffs to be put on, and walk out the door like nothing ever happened. Now, you can feel how you want to feel about that. I think that's ingenious and quite gangster. I'm sorry, go ahead, Roddy. What were you saying?
So, you know, I think it's horrible that it's gotten to this point, and the Republicans are taking it to a whole nother level. But that is what happens. And I remember in one of Dr. King's speeches, he talked about the dangers of gradualism, and we talked about that on the show. And that's, again, when you let this slide that wouldn't normally slide, and then more people do it, and then more people let it slide until it becomes the norm. So you move the needle, right? And then once the needle is moving, it becomes normalized, then people start doing something even more outrageous. But because the needle has slid from where it was before, it may not seem as bad. But then over time, you can see where the needle is far left or far right or north, south, however you want to, you know, describe it for yourself. And you see that, look at what is normal today compared to what was, what used to be normal. And that's kind of where we are. But, you know, I remember there's a Democrat, I think his last name is Blumenthal. I want to say he's from Connecticut, but I'm not sure. And what he did was he lied about his military service. He said he is in the military and he was in Vietnam and blah, blah, blah. And I think he was in the military, but he wasn't in Vietnam. But he wanted that credit for it. And when he was running for reelection, well, I think it might have been even when he was running for his initial election. But nothing happened to it. He still was allowed to maintain his seat. He still was, I believe, allowed to maintain his committees. So neither party owns this, but what we see it is an escalation of it, because the parties, when it was their person who did it, they let it slide. I'll give another example.
Turn the blind eye. He was from Connecticut.
Bill Clinton had his indiscretions with the cigar and Monica Lewinsky and wound up leaving some DNA on her dress that she, for some reason, decided to save. Smart move on her part, though.
That was a setup. She was an op.
Hey, whatever it was, Bill Clinton was allowed to get away with it, and the Democrats fought vehemently for him to have no action against him. It did not change him. He was still the president. He still wielded power. So now you have a guy sitting in office that everybody knows was, well, doing some things that he shouldn't have been doing with somebody he shouldn't have been doing it with for a multiplicity of reasons. And the Democrats fought against him having any major damage. Said back then, and I still maintain it now.
You said multiplicity? Okay, I thought you said something else. It sounded a little different.
Yeah, a whole bunch of things. So when the Democrats did that, what that led to was an escalation. And because remember, when Ronald Reagan, during Iran-Contra, the Democrats were all over him, right, for his indiscretions, of course, with money and cocaine that had devastating effects in the black community, but it mostly at the time impacted people in the black community. It's coming back to haunt them now with the opioid crisis. But the reason for it is because when you let these things go, there's always going to be impacts. It's kind of like what Sister Rashi was saying. When you have a tectonic plate that slips in the middle of the ocean, that's bad enough, but there's nobody living in the middle of the ocean. But when that tsunami wave makes it to where people live, it has an impact. And it didn't impact right when the earthquake happened. There was an impact later. And this is what we're seeing now. So the way that this potentially can be fixed, if both parties have to be hard-lined on their own when they do crazy stuff, otherwise, you know, we used to say, if you think 45 is bad, wait till the next guy. Well, you got DeSantis in Florida burning books and getting rid of black education, right? You got this guy that might be named George Santos or DeVolder or one of them or some of them. You have him, a total fraud, a person who's not even who he is, right? You have him, and he had committees given to him by the new speaker because the new speaker needed his vote to become speaker, and it became an exchange, a transaction.
Needed his vote, absolutely.
And you call him Sleepy Joe? Well, Sleepy Joe didn't look too sleepy up on the podium, and even think about that. Sleepy Joe has the name Sleepy because the crazy dude that was in office before him.
And before him, Contessa gave him that. You're right. We didn't have that for him. We was calling him old, but we didn't call him Sleepy because he seemed still kind of vibrant when I saw him. Like I said, he kept the quip going with the speech. And he had a little bit of clap back. And so he didn't feel like he had resigned himself to being somebody's scapegoat or whipping stick that night. And he stood. He didn't have to get sat down nowhere. He had to stay the whole time standing up. You know, people were expecting him not to be able to stand up that whole time.
We called him Jim Crow Joe. I don't want to make it and act like he just got names like Trump was the only one naming him something. We called him Jim Crow Joe based off of his crime bill. And I still try to figure out how we sweep that under the rug when we talk about him. You know, you robbed the church and killed the babies, but we gonna say, but he did bring Easter eggs. It don't matter. Both sides of the coin, there's something wrong with both sides. And the main part with both sides is they're working in cahoots with each other. And the people at the bottom, as Brother Rodney was saying about the tsunami, you know, it's not the initial blow, it's the backlash. And these laws or the lack of laws that sometimes are being passed, it happens. Like right now, we're dealing with a bunch of oligarchs, and we're so caught up into the politics of the Republican-Democrat Party, it begins to look like the WWE inside of the late 80s and early 90s. And really, at the end of the day, they all got the same mission, just different ways to get you there.
What's that old phrase about same bird, two wings? It's attached to the same thing.
That's it. Same bird. Two wings of the same bird. Hey,
well,
I felt
good about Hakeem Jeffries being acknowledged because I don't think we understood how hard it was for that young brother with his family affiliations and all that to finally get, you know, because it ain't that many black dudes up there at the top. I mean, they got the Rock for a while, but the farther up you go, it gets a little, especially on which committee you're talking. So it was good to see Hakeem Jeffries be acknowledged, and it was also good, even though it's horrible to see, it was good that he was willing to acknowledge Tyree and Nichols' mother and father and the absolute, you know, pain that they were suffering and put it on the forefront of, you know, people's brains that he was not going to, you know, and this should speak to you, Brother Barry, even though you calling him Jim Crow Joe, he spoke to your mission of keeping an eye, a watchful eye, and a regulatory quality control type eye on how Americans get policed in this country. So you mean to tell me even that part, it didn't speak to you, Brother Barry?
Hey, I am not from St. Louis, but I do reside in the Show Me State, okay? I need you to show me. I think that we love symbolism, and I don't love it. Symbolizing and saying the right things is a lot different than doing the right things. And that we don't have an anti-lynching bill or anti-police bill federally the way that we've been asking for. I'm glad that people are talking about it. But as I told my friends who were hitting me up after the Tyree situation, I said, well, how many of y'all bought shirts to support the app? Well, if you didn't support the app, I don't see how you really care. Are we supposed to cry every time somebody dies? Are we going to do something about it? I'm all about doing something about it. We have to get these people out of the way that they can give us these gestures while they give everybody else action. Your action matters. It's crazy. We talk that way about each other when it's about relationships between one another, how we interact with our families and other loved ones. But when it comes to the politics, because your vote is an investment in action happening, not gestures. So they're good at giving us gestures. They're always good at using the bully pulpit to tell us one thing and do something else. One last point. I always bring up the people, the same folks who gave us the DARE program and Say No to Drugs were the same people bringing drugs in. The same crazy president who told us No Child left behind many of children. It's all in the rhetoric. No, it's all in the action. We have to make sure we pay attention to the action.
You know, the action and even laws, again, a law is words on paper unless it's funded and there's enforcement mechanism.
There we go.
And punishment when it's not enforced. And so even when we talk about putting laws on the books, there has to be these other things. And that was one of the best political lessons that I've learned in my lifetime. And I actually have to thank the late Senator Harry Reid, who I had mixed feelings about, for personally educating me on that. Because I remember when he called for black leaders to come to his office and to meet with him and, you know, let him know what was going on and what our feelings were. And luckily, I said, man, he invited the wrong three people. He invited the three kings of Las Vegas in. It was the late Franklin G. Burley from New York. It was Ramon Savoy from that had the radio, the newspaper here. Franklin had the shows on the radio, and he invited me. And when we went there, we just, bam, we told him exactly how we felt about him and what was going on. And what he asked us, what did we want to see? And when we brought up a few laws that we thought were good laws, I still remember him calling for his aide, because he was just meeting with us, right? He called for his aide to come into the room, and he says, was there any funding for that? And I think it was a question I asked him about education. He said, was there any funding for that? She checked, Rook said no. He said, it don't mean nothing.
Mm.
And, you know, we were like, what do you mean it don't mean nothing? That's the law. He said,
right.
There's no funding to it to implement it. And that's when he came out and he said, look, this is what we use on y'all all the time. He said that. He said, yeah, once you pressure us, going back to what Thomas said about words, he said, you all want something. We don't do it. So then you put pressure on us. You march a little bit. You start giving speeches. He says, but then you start talking about not voting. Or voting for somebody else. He said, that's when, you know, it's money or votes. He said, so you talk about not voting, all right, we have to do something. So what we do is we'll pass a law. He said, because as soon as that law is signed and we have the ceremony for the great work that the citizens did and how we listened to the citizens, and he said, you all go home and have a party, and then you walk away. He said, as soon as you walk away, we close the book on it because there's no funding. Or there's no enforcement, or there's no penalty for lack of enforcement, or there's none of any of it, right? He says, and I give him credit because he kind of showed us the game. He said that's the wrong thing. He says, it's kind of like Frederick Douglass. You know, Frederick Douglass basically said, we have to keep on pushing, even when it looked like we received whatever it was we wanted, we still have to keep pushing. That's what he, that was in essence what he said, was, nah, you shouldn't go home. He says, if you really believe on it, you got to stay there and make sure that it has these things. Otherwise, in a few more years, you're going to be back at us, and we're going to pass another law, even though there's already the same law on the book, so you'll go home.
I want to pivot. Hold everybody for a second. I want to pivot before we go too far. We got about a half an hour left in the show, and we need to have this battle. You know, it's Black History Month. We have a historical moment going on tomorrow. There are two black quarterbacks playing in the Super Bowl, and I want to get everybody's pick. Rashi, are you going with the Eagles? You said you were going with the Eagles?
You are so funny. No, don't start with me, because I want to hear you and Thomas Berry justify absolutely disrespectful you were about the prospects of us being here even discussing this subject at this moment. There was
Thomas,
no room for this conversation even 2 or 3 weeks ago. am I correct, or have I just been embattled so bad in the classroom that I don't remember the chatter?
Thomas, who you going with?
Well, I'm going with the Chiefs, but I recall me stating that I thought.
I'm sorry, the who?
The Chiefs. The Chiefs, but I recall me stating.
The Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, the Kansas City Chiefs, but I do recall me stating that the only reason why I thought Buffalo was going to win was because of the situation with the young man. I didn't think Buffalo was the better team. I said the league was going to make it to where Buffalo was going to go. So let me clarify that. You heard some of the lessons of Brother Rodney said you just stayed through for the whole thing. And so you went home and were celebrating. So I just want to make sure I clarify that. So I'm going for the Chiefs. I, the Cowboys fan, I would never, ever, ever cheer the Eagles on for anything. If the game ended in a tie versus them winning, I would not be mad. So that's my point.
Well, I'm going with, drum roll, please, no. I'm going with the Chiefs as well. I said that.
Who?
Yeah, Kansas City. And I'll tell you why.
Kansas City, Missouri Chiefs?
It is because of the experience factor. They're healthy. You have a hell of a play caller on that sideline with the enemy and the coach. And Andy Reid.
You talking about Andy Reid?
Yep, I think this is his swan song. I think he'll step away after this one. And it's the right thing. You know what I'm saying? But again, you look at their receivers aren't the strongest. I think Philly definitely has a better receiver core. I think the defense is pretty even. I think what the difference, though, is going to be understanding the game, understanding the rules, and making those adjustments that I just don't see Philly being able to make on the fly. I could be wrong, but I'm going with the Kansas City.
Mr. Rodney, care to put your point in?
You know, I don't have a dog in the fight. I got one of the newest team or the newest team that moved in the league right now. So, you know, the Raiders are sitting on the sidelines at the giant hockey puck, otherwise known as the Death Star. So even though our food giveaway program will be giving away free ribs and steaks and hot dogs and stuff tomorrow at our Super Bowl party for the people. So come on out and get your free food and your free meat while it lasts. But, you know, I'm an East Coast guy. So if I have to pick, you know, I'm gonna have to roll with, you know, who rocks the most. It's the East Coast. So I
got
to go, you know, Philly.
Eagles.
So that's I'm making that call. I'm an East Coast guy living on the West Side, but I'm still going to support my home side, and that's the East Side.
Well, this is probably going to shock you because I'm a, you know, like most – y'all from afar, and I've been I've been looking at these people now for almost 30 years. And I tell my friends that any relationship with the chief is abusive. It's the husband who blacks your eye and buys you flowers. He plans a vacation, but he golfs 87% of the vacation alone. Please don't come. Go find something. It's a relationship where you think you got something. You be so sure. They make you feel so in love, like it's you. It's just really you and them. And then things happen in that they have these weird, where they can't compute, like they have syntax errors. And a lot of it happens around being pressured. Some of it, honestly, we fail. Some of our players can't even get on the field because they done some dumb shit out here in the streets, like being caught with weed or smacking women up and shit. You know, just dumb shit. And then, so it's kind of an immaturity that runs, in my opinion, through there. You should see them out when they kick it. You can hear a whole tale of women saying that they've been, what I'm saying is, I don't think we're dealing with mature individuals. And I just believe that Philadelphia has a class of more mature people who have, you know, real problems to handle. And it's just not out here in the middle of the prairie playing too many games, you know, understand, with no real pressure. We don't ask very much of our athletes. They do stuff for us sometimes, like build teen centers and parks in the middle of the street. But for real, they're not humanitarian. And so when I look at what all that money does for Kansas City, I'm just not impressed. So they don't have my allegiance. They don't have me saying, hey, you know, go Chiefs. I've seen them fold under pressure. And if somebody roll over on our quarterback's ankle, he's right back with one play, right back into the realm of healing, okay? And we don't even for real know nothing about that other dude. So I don't think we are prepared personally for the kind of pressure that they're about to get. A lot of people have been sitting back watching our quarterback. While they're playing them, they're still, like, sitting back watching them. And he can do weird shit like get hit and tackled and still throw the ball sideways and then make it to somebody. Or, you know, or do, like, a flea flicker and run and then get the ball thrown back to him. He do weird stuff out on the field. So there is a spectacle to it all. But I still find it to be immature, not seasoned, not like a machine that you can trust that's going to keep turning the cog every time. So I think enough pressure is going to get put on Kansas City tomorrow that they're going to fold. They're not going to be able to do all the fun stuff that they like to do when they get out there. They're going to be up against people who eat potatoes. I mean, Philly is not sushi. And, you know, it's not a sushi. These people don't eat, you know, they're not fighting West Coasters, you know, people who out there eating grass fed. No, Philly people have, like, soot in the air, you know what I'm saying? What I'm talking about is a more mature mentality because of the location. And, you know, we're talking about manufacturers, and these people have grown from being steel workers. Their grandpappy was a steel worker, you know. And the best we can say is our grandpappy is from somewhere. Kansas City is not a mecca of economic development. I really do feel that the amount of maturity and pressure that is going to be placed on Kansas City tomorrow is going to find that young fella with his slightly swollen ankle in a very serious bind. Relying on people who I don't think he's done all that much work with. He only throw to two or three people. It'd be like Travis Kelce and maybe one or two other people, and that's it. So I think he's going to be pressured so hard and ran over so many times that they're going to start fighting and get mad because they favorite home, you know, they little favorite mixed breed homeboy is about to get folded up real bad. And that's going to be one of the keys to them winning. They're going to have to hurt that young fella. And when they get through hurting him, and, you know, he's going to try to keep playing, and then his trainer going to pull him out, and then we're going to finish the rest of the game with the second-rate dude that we pulled out that nobody know the name of or by his jersey. So, and that'll be the game. And we'll be mad, and we'll be cussing Philly, and we'll start all over again like an abusive wife in July. We won't even wait till October, Lee. We'll be back dragging and simping for these people in June.
Okay. Well, I had two Black History facts, and I know Rocky wanted to talk about Fannie Lou Hamer. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the founding of the NAACP. It was founded on 12 February in 1909. It will be 123 years old. Yeah, 123 years old tomorrow. Also, February is the month in which the first Black senator was elected from the state of Mississippi. Hiram, how do you pronounce his last name? Revell? Yeah, Revell's. He was the first Black senator elected to the U.S. Senate from the state
it's
of Mississippi.
Hiram.
He served
by the
in
way,
Hiram. Hiram. He served from February 1870 to March 1871. Those were my Black History facts for this weekend. Rashi, what you got for family?
Revel was a powerhouse. Revel was a powerhouse. Him and Robert Smalls and a lot of those other people who came in and let them know, no, we were not going to be eating watermelon on the Congress floor. And even if we did, we were going to use a fork. We wasn't going to spit the seeds. You know, they was doing us real dirty when we were trying to put our names into the, you know, put our needs into the laws and legislation of this country, you know, the right way. They was doing really bad reports about what a Reconstructionist senator or representative, you know, is possible of doing. And so, yeah, and to speak on that, later on, they got so convinced that they could remove the African-American from the legal process of being able to, you know, be represented, to have legal representation under the Constitution and the ability to vote, that when a young powerhouse young lady named Fannie Lou Hamer came to her power and understanding of what her mission and calling was to do for us, they just were not ready. They weren't ready for, you know, a white man to say what she was saying, and they were certainly not ready to deal with the resolve and the persistence that came with a woman like Fannie Lou Hamer. So we talk in 1917 to 1970-something, I think it was 77, or was it 73, I'm sorry. And she did so much work. She did mostly in telling her testimony. See, what she would do is she trained herself, she educated herself to make sure she was literate. She went to school as long as she could and still help her sharecropping, her cotton sharecropping family. And so when she did finally get older and was able to kind of dedicate herself to community work, one of the first things she did was attempt to balance the scales or fix the ways that the sharecroppers were being disenfranchised by the people who were agricultural people who were exploiting their labor. So she found a way to get them their money for their hundreds of pounds of cotton they were turning in for just mere pennies on the dollar. Because she found out how they had, you know, off the scales so that it didn't register true. And so that was some of her first beginnings of trying to get us our due. And it moves on to her doing a lot of work in the voter registration realm. She wanted to make sure that Black people were able to move people out of our way legislatively who were not willing to write laws or enforce laws, like Brother Thomas said, or to make sure that we had the ability to have somebody to talk to, even when laws were not being enforced and followed. She was a part of the crew that tried to make sure that we were able to have the representation that we needed in order to tell our testimony and have our testimonies accrue to change within our society. You're going to get a lot of quotes by Fannie Lou, but her most prominent one is sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I do believe, like no other time in life, that African Americans are truly sick and tired. We have noticed this rampant abuse, you know, by people in authority. We have noticed this disenfranchisement. We're tired of being told where we can't live, and now to where we don't want to live there. You can't make us live there, or we want to own the whole block if we live there. We're starting to ask for our reparations, not in a please begging way, but in a legal way, making our claim for what we deserve. And we're tired of relying on a government that has shown us that they're not ready to accommodate us fully. Even if they wanted to, some of us believe they absolutely cannot. Like, if we all went and got what we are due from this nation, it would break it. And so we have to find a way in order to get those needs met without breaking the country, without ruining this way of life that we have agreed is the American way. If you're not leaving and you're staying, you're agreeing that you're going to be an American for better or for worse. And some of that work that has to be done is generational. So what Fannie taught me was that her work was given to her. Her work was bestowed upon her by the injustices she was seeing amongst her people. And she passed that down to, man, Mississippi is a powerhouse of social justice. And those old women were making sandwiches and marching and all that. And those women migrated all around this nation and had their children who had made sure that they didn't get treated the way, you know, Master Tom and them was treating them down south. And so that spread, that migration around this nation that Fannie Lou Hamer was a part of, I think, is the most important lesson we had from her, is that if you're going to make him do something, you can't do it from afar. You teach a sleeper cell full of people what needs to happen and then release them. Release them to all the four corners and all the other nooks and crannies in this nation. And in time, you will see those mission statements manifest themselves in the behaviors and decisions of the lineage, the children of that population. And I am, honestly, because my grandmother was a child of the Bolivar County, Sunflower County, Mississippi population, I am a direct reflection of what Fannie Lou Hamer was trying to embody. I am Rashid Johnson Edmonds. I am a direct descendant of the work of Fannie Lou Hamer. And that's why I would like to champion her today and ask anyone who's interested to do an internet deep dive, watch the videos, do some reading, buy the books of those who have written about the famous freedom riders and fighters of the South, because she's in there. And that's my spiel on Fannie Lou Hamer.
All right, that's what's up. Rodney, you have anything to add?
Well, as Rodney is talking about Fannie Lou Hamer, it just made me think of my former congresswoman, the first black woman in Congress, and possibly because of Fannie Lou Hamer, and that's the late great unbought and unbossed Shirley Chisholm, Shirley Anita Chisholm, first black woman in Congress, who not only did she grow up in Brooklyn, but she's from the same neighborhood that I'm from, Bedford-Stuyvesant, if we call it Bed-Stuy. And, you know, she came on the scene spitting fire, similarly, but maybe in a slightly more sophisticated cadence than Fannie Lou Hamer. And that's possibly because of her initial education in the in the islands, and the slight British tink that she had to her voice. And so just as we talked about the first men elected to Congress, I just wanted to remind us that the first woman, which was, she was elected in my lifetime, and I think it was 1972. So Shirley Chisholm, unbought and unbossed, I still remember her. I think that I'm glad that Sister Rashi and you all are doing this, because just like in the well of the Senate and in the House, if you don't remember the goodness, we disappear and be overshadowed by all of the badness that's out there. And there are a lot of lights in there for us to guide us, with Rebels being one, Blanche K. Bruce being another, and then of course with our sheroes like the Fannie Lou Hamer and Shirley Chisholm.
Brother Barry?
You know what? I would say today, my mindset is shout out to the people who supported all the people that everyone's going to name. What I'm learning every day with history, it is the no-name folk that we don't call their names who made all of our heroes and sheroes possible. And they don't, we don't get enough. And that's also a mark to say, hey, we're all called to lead. Some folks think that, you know, I'm going to let Brother Rodney do that. I'm going to let Brother Lee or Sister Rashi do that. But we all got a responsibility in this fight. And none of our heroes and sheroes would be here without the support that they get and the people who inspired them and gave them comfort while they were fighting the system. And we have to remember that all the people, the people that you walk by every day, I think Brother Rodney taught me that great lesson that he learned from Brother Sam, Elder Sam, is that everywhere you go, you should know the people that are serving the food, you should have a conversation with folks, you should make connections, because those are the people who usually, the unsung heroes and sheroes, who actually are pivotal in making progress in this country. So salute to all those folks. We're all Black history, no matter what your melanated skin is, the white folk included. We're all a part of this history.
Well, I just want to know if y'all watched the Grammys either. Did y'all see them 35
Grammys? 35
Grammys. Okay. Okay, how many did Beyonce get then?
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah.
How many? You're right.
How many
well,
did
I
they get?
I didn't watch the Grammys. I couldn't tell you, but I'll tell you, I haven't watched the Grammys, and even though that they gave an ode to hip hop, I'm like, yeah, everybody got to sell hip hop now, because their shows are not selling no more. And so now we get to get in the door as long as we sell tickets. Well, hell, they didn't have no respect for us any other time, and they still don't have respect for us. They still got the categories wrong. So I just don't know. But I don't know how many Queen Beyonce got, as they call her online. I just know those ticket prices that she selling, man, it's costing an arm and a leg, Brother Rodney. And, you know, I would recommend folks just go visit an old Mississippi juke joint.
Wait, what do you do right now if you want to go see Super Bowl and Beyonce, okay? If you want to go see and you want to go to Mardi Gras.
Start going to the sperm bank and donate to the sperm bank. Start giving up blood. I'm telling you, that's what you got to do in order to afford that. That stuff is ridiculous, man. I think the lowest ticket for the Super Bowl was like $4,500 or something like that. The Beyonce ticket was about the same thing, if not a little more. That's too much, man. And look, Essence right around the corner, too. Man, you out your daggone tree. You got to sell your firstborn child for all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna have to decide if we're gonna have to put a humble pie on these people. We're gonna have to do like they do in, you know, what we doing with the perms. If you go run your hand over a box of perms right now, they dusty. We just not on it. Very few. You understand? So we're gonna have to just make a market pivot and make a conscious boycotting decision that if you sell or try to sell us a ticket more than what's the cutoff, Lee? What's the most you're going to pay to see Beyonce?
I'm the wrong person to ask about that. I'm the wrong person to ask about that. I'm not a Beyonce fan like that. So, yeah, she's fine, but.
No, we're not talking about her being. She's not going to come sit on
being,
your lap, brother.
I don't, right,
okay?
And
I'm
I don't respect
about
her being.
The spectacle of the show.
But see, there you go. I don't respect her as a singer, so I'm not spending a lot of money to see the spectacle of the show. If she was a hell of a singer, then, you know, we thought. Because, like, I'm looking at some daggone Jill Scott tickets, and I'm joining like 400. And I'm like, ugh. But I would pay that because Jill Scott can sing her butt off. So I would pay that to go see Jill Scott. But for me, that's a lot of daggone money. That's a lot of money.
Jill Scott would have to sing. Yeah, Jill Scott would have to sit on my lap for $400. But we do have to have a conversation with these people about this perceived value. We don't want to have them feel like we don't give a damn about their talent. They already pulling up L's with these music streaming people because we not buying that CD. Best we do is we go and download it for $1. If we get it for $1, or we just pay for the service and they didn't already paid her $1. And so we're not giving them the money they deserve. If they don't get the money on tour, if they don't sell hot wings or hot sauce, if they don't have their own liquor, or if they not, you know, doing some weird Magic Johnson shit with it, or Shaq stuff where they have their finger in five different pies, then the tour money is the money. Now, what people is mad about is she just called up enough money. She just got a lottery winnings worth of money.
I agree with
Dubai.
That.
But here's the problem. To do Dubai, she didn't show up with some snake fireworks and an old bikini she had. There's a production that happens where thousands of people have to get paid.
Well, you know,
and
be respectful to her business.
The Carters they make sure they get their money, so they paying people. Give me my whole check, and I'll pay them people.
But to be respectful to her business, because I don't want to disrespect her business, to be respectful to it, people are only as valuable as what other people are willing to pay for it. So I just say to fans, stop living the flex. If you can't afford it, I know it's tax season. I know you feel like you can just go ahead and pawn off 2.5% of your children's money off to it. I would recommend that you think twice about that. The other side of it, too, is I don't want to blame the Carters or anybody else for the price. It's just that our value system is wrong. If we had a proper value system, then people wouldn't be trying that, and that's really what it is. All salute. Shout out to any of our folks that can make a living legitimately without killing someone. But I honestly believe that the art itself is not that good. If you guys want an R&B album, Brother Lee, Sister Rashi, Brother Rodney, an R&B album that sounds like good R&B soul music, it's this young brother that dropped the album on Friday from my hometown, Southland, Indiana. His name is October London. And I tell you, it's called The Rebirth of Marvin. It is an ode to Marvin Gaye. And when you guys listen to this record from A to Z, it is nothing but love music. All
okay.
But to me, I would say, you know, while I have no issues with Sister getting her money, I just think that, you know, we live in a time where fandom is just too serious. Like, whether it is the Beyonce, if it's not Nicki Minaj and her the Barbs, if it's not Cardi B and her people, it's the fan stuff and the online stuff, man. It's just nasty. It's nasty because it places value on things that really don't have no value. It places respect and honor and dignity on things that have no respect, honor, and dignity laced to it. When you have respectable people, we don't even respect respectable people no more because of what we see online. And so to me, as a fan of music, as an artist, because I can still get in that studio and I can still create art, put me in a studio for 2 hours and I'll give you a hit, put money on it. But I'll tell you, I do not respect the way that the artists have allowed themselves to pimp the people. And Sister Rasha, you said something about CDs. Artists was never really making money off CDs to begin with. They were making 35 cents on average per sale. It's always been about the touring. However, with the touring, Beyonce's charging prices as if this is her last tour. This is not prices, you know, she ain't Michael Jackson. She doesn't have a song that's going to change, like to have people crying overseas. And so that's the way I look at it. You know, she's selling sex. And as far as I'm concerned, we talked about Black History figures. I mean, it's just the next coming of Hot and Tot Venus.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. Hot and Tot, huh? Ouch. She said she has rebranded Hot and Tot, huh? Or even
that's what
worse,
she did.
Because her name was Sarah Bartman.
Bartman.
So she has rebranded the Sarah Bartman for us, and now we are willing to repay. We're repaying in the thousands for the spectacle that was people staring at a Black woman with an endowed seat behind. Well,
two things I want to get in real quick. First off, speaking honor on the name of Sam Smith. Rodney put in the chat that it was the anniversary of his passing a couple of days ago, so I want to give props to him. And then, Rashi, this one is for you. Did you see your baby mama and her response to the State of the Union? She went home.
My baby mama, no, I did not see it, but I don't know.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she looked horrible. Just horrible. I don't know what her speech was aimed at, but it did not hit on anything that the State of the Union covered. She made it seem like she and Donald Trump served together in a wartime faction. Neither of them have ever served. It was completely off base. It was tone deaf, and I think it was a huge miss on her part. But it was a declaration that she has no intention of running for president this cycle at all. She stayed safe. She played the Trump card, and she took herself gracefully out of any potential
The Republicans is hurt, and they can't put hardly none of the dudes up there. They can't put honey none of the women up there. The women is loud and brazen and shouting. And the dudes is not real. They got fake profiles and the whole nine. So they had to go back to the last Republican we actually fucking believed. And who was it? My baby mama with her fat, ugly self. It was my baby. But that's sad, though, because she's a liar like the rest. But this is the last person that they could conceive, right, to deliver any kind of message. Because I always found it weird who they trot out. To critique
a
president's message, but we just need to be vigilant. Watch this news with a squinty eye. Always look for the other side. Like we said, when the plate hit on one side, there always is some kind of reverb somewhere.
Gotcha. All right.
And so,
Rodney,
reverb.
Any final comments for you, Rodney?
Just remember that on February 10th, which was yesterday. That was when the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964. The Civil Rights Act passed on February 10th.
Okay. Brother Barry?
Hey, man, I just want to say shout out to all you folks out there that's listening. Hey, Real Radio is Black History as well. Shout out to Brother Lee, Sister Rashi, Brother Rodney. I appreciate you guys getting up every Saturday morning, taking time out and doing that. Salute to you.
Thank you. You all for listening live, listening late. Thank you all for joining us. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I am transitioning from Maryland to North Carolina. That will happen toward the beginning of next month. I'm looking forward to that. Until then, as we always say about this time, we love you in advance. And you can do about it. Peace!